Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Coming up on episode 292 of Wheel Bearings, we've got the Cadillac CT5 Blackwing, the Kia Sportage plug-in hybrid, the Hyundai Ioniq 5, the new Mazda CX-90s with our first drive impressions, and also first drive impressions of the Hyundai Ioniq 6. That and GM is taking away smartphone projection from your EV. All that and more coming up next. This is episode 292 of Wheel Bearings, closing in on 300. I am Sam Abul-Samad from Guidehouse Insights.
And I am Nicole Wakelin from Let's Go With Fast Women podcast.
And I'm Roberto Baldwin from Ars Technica.
And Mr. Baldwin, what have you been driving?
I've been driving a lot of things. I can't talk about them. But I've been driving since Thursday. I've been driving the Kia Sportage.
Sportage.
More specifically, the 2023 Sportage PHEV X-Line Prestige all-wheel drive.
That's a lot.
I mean, I guess you don't need all-wheel drive in the name.
If I start a car company, everything's going to have like year, make, model. That's it. And just be a trim level 1, 2, and 3.
I spoke to the... CEO of Polestar, and I was like, how come you don't want, you know, names? It's all Polestar 1, Polestar 2. He's like, you know what, a pain in the ass. He's like, I've been in so many meetings where we have to come up with a name, and then you have to, like, legal has to go through, and then you have to make sure it doesn't mean something weird in another country. It's not, you know, a bad word or sexual position. Or he's like, and I kind of like, you know, this is the Polestar 3. This is the Polestar 2. This is the Polestar. I'm like, yeah, okay.
I can get behind that idea. It's easier than these 85-word descriptions for different cars.
Then you say the Polestar 2, long range, short range, whatever. Polestar, whatever.
I have a sneaking feeling, though, that as Polestar launches more models in the next few years, we're going to start seeing more suffixes added on there to distinguish the variants.
Like, we're going to be like Polestar 547.
Like, it's going to be like OS. It's like Mac OS 10. It's like it was OS 10.1, 10.2, 10.3, 10.4. Now it's like Monterey, Mojave, Barstow. Like, this is the new Polestar Barstow. Oh, okay. Anyway, back to the 2023 Sportage PHEV X-Line Prestige all-wheel drive. Mm-hmm. You know what? It's Kia, Hyundai. You get inside, you're like, oh, this feels much nicer than it should. When you look at the layout. One thing I do not like is and maybe I just can't find the setting, but it hasn't. One of the things they did with the EV6 GT is you have that little area where you can, you know, the little touch, sort of tiny capacitive touch area for climate or media controls. And so you hit a little button and it switches to media controls. You hit the little button, switches to climate. On the EV6 GT, what they've done is they've updated that so it defaults back to something. So you can have it default back to either media controls or climate. So If you know you're going to be changing the media controls a lot, you can hit the button. It'll go to climate. You can change the climate. And then after a few moments, it'll go back to media controls. That way, later on, you're not turning the heat up and down while trying to adjust the volume of your music. I don't think the update has come out, has hit the Sportage yet, or at least the one I'm in. And so it goes to one and then it stays to it. And then because I've gotten used to the EV6 GT, I'm turning the heat up and down while trying to What's going on? And I'm like, oh, I guess I could just use the steering wheel, but it's not the same. Other than that, you know, it's Kia. It's got the PHEV. I've only had this for a few days, so I haven't had a chance to do an exhaustive test. So I haven't been able to just fill it up full of electrons and then drive as far as possible to see how far it'll go. EPA says it'll do 35 miles on the wait, that's wrong. EPA says they'll do 34 miles. 34 miles.
And you said 35. I mean, horrible. I said 35. Horrible exaggeration.
I said 35. I know. I apologize. It has an MPGE combined of 84. You know what? It's here's the thing with this car.
Yeah.
It's bigger. You know, it's larger than the Kona and everything, but it's not as big as the Telluride. It's kind of like a in this weird middle spot between these two.
It's the just right temperature of porridge. It's not too hot. It's not too cold.
Yeah,
it's just right.
Yeah. It's not, you know, the I really like the Kona. The Kona just feels like a fun little car. Mm-hmm. And I really like the Niro. The Niro is a fun, it's the same car.
Close enough.
One's a little bigger than the other. I really like the Niro. It's not quite as fun as the Kona, but it's still like a small, it's essentially just a tall hatchback. All those crossovers are just tall hatchbacks. Meanwhile, the Telluride is this like, you know, market busting machine.
Giant
that just makes
vehicle.
That just makes everyone feel like, oh no, what have we been doing for the last 20 years? These people just come in and change everything. And then the Sportage is just sort of this there in the middle and kind of, I think, maybe a little forgotten. But it's probably, I'm sure it probably sells a lot, but it just doesn't get a lot of like, oh yeah, the Sportage.
You know what it is? It's like, it's a great car, but it's not like there's nothing standout-y about it. Like there's nothing that really strikes your attention. So it just kind of is under the radar. But once you notice it, you're like, oh, hey, wait, this is actually all right. You know?
Yeah, you it's just sort of there, and then you drive it around like okay. And even the Soul, which the first time I was about to drive it, I had a broken leg, so I had it's a long story. and I was like, oh man, I have to drive the Soul because I was getting a car from one of the short term car rental agencies in the city, and I got in the car, and then 2 minutes I'm like, this car is awesome because it's exactly what it's supposed to be, and that's sort of what the Sportage is. It's exactly what it's supposed to be. It just that doesn't look as kooky and fun as the Soul.
I love that they haven't changed the Soul. Well, I mean, they change it, but it's still this little boxy thing.
Yeah, it's a little box. It's just so much room in that car.
Yeah.
And I'm still sad they didn't bring the EV version over because they just couldn't make enough batteries. I drove it. It was really fun to drive, but they just couldn't make enough batteries. The Sportage plug-in hybrid, the PHEV, starts at $38,690. The version I was in... with all the bells and whistles because it was the X-Line Prestige. The starting price for that is, I guess it's still, anyway. It was $42,990. Then, I'm going to mess up the whole game. Anyway, it's a lot of money. you know what? You gave me the extra hour sleep to do the podcast today, and
you're all off kilter. You're completely off.
I'm wired. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. But it gets, you know, gasoline only. It's like 35 miles per gallon. You're like, wow, that's pretty good. I have not charged this thing since Thursday. I just picked it up, drove it home, and I've just been busy with other things. But I've been driving it a lot.
Yeah.
I'm getting 38 miles per gallon. Just driving around without charging it, and it charges it a little bit, and you get a little bit of, you know, a little bit of charge, but it's definitely not what you're going to get if you plugged it in.
I mean, that's basically what you would get with just a Sportage hybrid.
Yeah. It's a Sportage hybrid, essentially. If you are really lazy like me the last few days, because, you know, you're plugging in your own EV, you're still going to get like 35 for me, 38. And this is on highway. I'm just driving back and forth on the highway. Picking things up, dropping things off, picking things up, dropping things off. And so that's pretty good. And again, you don't need the X line. You probably, you know, you need all wheel drive if that's your jam. But yeah, overall, you know, it's a nice little car. It's got a 1.6 liter turbocharged plug-in hybrid, 6-speed automatic. You know, when you're driving, there's been a few times where you can sort of, there is a little, I don't want to say lag, but you can feel it's not as smooth, the transition from the gasoline engine to the EV powertrain. Most of the time it is, but every once in a while you get a little bump, you get a little jar. But for the most part, it's fine. The driver's assist technology, Kia and Hyundai have been working on this for a while. It's still pretty good. That's you know what it comes down to it. you know, cut-ins, it breaks a little bit later than I think most people would feel comfortable with for a cut-in. This is when someone pulls in front of you while you're, you know, when you're driving. Android Auto and CarPlay, you just get it. It's not going away anytime soon, like some other company.
At least not for these guys.
At least we know of. That we know. Oh my God. We'll talk about that later.
That's later in the show. We can fight about that.
We can. That's someone shooting themselves in the foot. Overall, no, I this is a nice, you know, if you want a midsize SUV, two rows, you need some cargo space, you want some pretty good gas mileage. It can get a little pricey once you hit those when you get the Prestige and all wheel drive, but you know, 38,000, you know, something to sneeze at, but you know, you're getting a lot of car. And of course the interior is really nice. So you have this, the nice sort of that nice Kia interior, the Kia Hyundai interior, where you feel like you're getting a better car than what you paid for.
Mm-hmm. I
would agree. Excellent.
Yeah.
What about the delivery charge?
Hold on. Let me open. I just closed the tab. Let me reopen the tab. Da, 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 da. All right. What do you guys think?
I'm going to say $1,195.
I'm going to say $1,100.
Oh, Sam wins today.
Of course he does.
$1,295. So the actual price for the car was $44,285. But I couldn't say that because I left out the, when I said the first time, the number, that was the price without the shipping and handling charge. So yeah, so it's a $45,000 vehicle in my driveway, which it's a lot. At that point, which is throwing $45,000, you're like, well, maybe I just go up to the next vehicle.
At that point, is it worth, you know, just, you know, jump a couple thousand more and get an EV6?
Yeah, exactly. Yes. So, yeah, that's what happens a lot of times when they send us these vehicles. They send us the best of the best. And then it starts bumping up against other vehicles in that automakers or other vehicles that are the next next segment up, and you're just like, well, what am I so
well, I guess, I mean, what is the starting price for the plug-in hybrid?
It is $38,690. So it's,
or is that the base trim, or
that's
is that
for the plug-in hybrid base starting price? Yeah
So I mean, that's, you know, that's a little more reasonable.
Yeah.
And of course, you can also get the Sportage hybrid, just a regular hybrid, which is going to be a lot cheaper.
Oh yeah, that one starts at $27,490. So,
which one would you get?
Man, that's a tough one, because it depends on if you can charge at home. If you have something to plug it in, and you have a 35-mile round trip every day, mm-hmm. you just drive around without ever using gas. But does it, you know, without with the IRA the way it is, and does that work for you financially as a regular person? Probably not. So you might end up just getting the hybrid. But you know, hopefully they can start bringing these prices down, because a $10,000, you know, jump is,
that's a big chunk of change.
That's a big chunk of change. And you're like, okay, if I live in California, you're like, oh, that's kind of a no brainer. Cause that's like $10,000 is like 3 months of gas. But if you live somewhere else, you know, you gotta bust out the spreadsheet, and you gotta bust out the calculator. You gotta do your ROI. You gotta figure out your return on investment. And then, you know, and if you have, you need somewhere to charge. If you don't have any, if you're an apartment dweller, you get the hybrid. If you have a house and you have something you can just plug in, and it doesn't need to have a level two, you don't need to go out and buy a charger. You can just get whatever comes with the car.
And that's kind of, you know, where the decision point comes in. If you have somewhere to plug in,
mm-hmm.
but you know that you are, you know, maybe semi-regularly going to want to take longer trips, you know, the plug-in hybrid, you know, allows you to do your daily driving on electricity, not have to necessarily invest, you know, what, depending on your house and, you know, the configuration of your house, what could be potentially several thousand dollars to install a level two charger, you know, if you've got an older electrical panel, And, you know, and then also not have any hassle, you know, planning when you want to take a longer road trip. So you can plug into a 120 volt outlet, charge overnight, do your electric driving, and then just keep going when you want to take longer road trips. So that's kind of where the sweet spot lies for a plug-in hybrid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you have that place and you have that, you know, most people don't do road trips. Don't tell me you're doing a road trip. And then when I ask you when's the last time you did a road trip, it was 7 years ago.
Yeah.
That doesn't count.
That doesn't count. You know, and also don't like every day I drive 350 miles. I'm like, well, do you though? And yes, yeah. There are other people who are the outliers. I'm like, well, then just don't get this. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is not the car for you.
There's still plenty of internal combustion choices, you know, if you are that person.
And you can just get the hybrid if you're driving 7 billion miles a day, which is again,
it's so fuel efficient.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's 44 miles per gallon with just the hybrid. If you get the nicer, fancier one, it's 38 miles per gallon, but it's still, you know, you're still getting a lot of you're still getting some nice efficiency out of this vehicle. So, and it's nice inside, and yeah, you can plug in your
nice
phone
inside.
All righty, Nicole.
Yes.
What about you?
I have. It's funny. I feel like I've been like all Hyundai lately. I drove the Ioniq 6 last week, really
sounds
recently.
Right.
It feels like last week. And now I'm in the Ioniq 5, which I went backwards in time to drive the Ioniq 5, which I really like. So the interesting thing about the Ioniq 5 to me is that it looks different. I mean, it has such an angular design to it as opposed to all these nice sort of curvy, swoopy, sporty things that they do in a lot of the design. And it was a very intentional thing. It wasn't like Hyundai phoned it in. They really came up with something different for this. And I love that when you look at everything, they have a theme. There's these little squares, pixels. Someone argued with me they aren't pixels. Hyundai calls them pixels. So to heck with you all, they're pixels. And
I told you it wasn't a pixel.
Somebody claimed it couldn't be a pixel because it was not emitting light. I mean, I got an engineer who tried to be like, well, actually, and I was like, well, actually, that's what they call it. So to heck with you, engineering guy.
Well, and actually, pixel LCD.
What? Yeah.
Don't emit, you know, if you're looking at an LCD, the pixels don't actually emit light either. They have a separate light behind there. The pixels that you see are just a shutter that opens and closes. So yeah, the fact whether or not it emits light has nothing to do with whether it's a pixel.
Taha, yeah. See, Sam, yeah. For the win. See, this guy, I was like, stop it. It's marketing and whatever. So I like that. I like that they have it when you look in the lights on the back, you see all these little squares, whether it's lit up at night or whether it's just during the day, you can still see all these little squares. Like when you look at the handles, when the little pop-out handles in the car, there's a tiny little square in the handles. You open the door, you have the same little pixel design, like on the interior, on the door, it's on the seats. You see, even the steering wheel, it doesn't say Hyundai or have an H on it. It just has four little square pixels. So I think that I like the design of this, and the wheels are even striking. Like it's, not every car when you drive around, do people actually notice your car? They notice it for two reasons, I think, when you're a journalist. Either it's weird and different, or it's like, oh my gosh, that car costs more than my house. Those are the two reasons that people notice you when you're driving a press car. This one does not cost more than your house, but it looks totally different. So I get a lot of people, you can see them sort of doing that, like, what on earth is she driving? Because you don't see a lot of them on the road. I think it's kind of hard to get into one. And I'm in the Northeast, where we don't have as many people buying into the EV lifestyle as we do in other areas of the country because the charging network, I think, largely. One of my favorite things about this is how this car looks. And I know I talk about design and how things look a lot, but you're not like the performance needs to be good, but you're not looking at, it's the things you look at and you experience all the time. You will sit there and you will look at this car every single second of every single day that you sit in it. You are always looking at this. You are always having to deal with the design. You're always having to deal with, and I think it looks good. I feel like you're driving a little something of the future, not something that's like dated and some old school idea. I feel like it looks like what's coming, not what was. And I really appreciate that. It's nice and roomy inside. It has some great little nooks and crannies for storage. I love that underneath the dashboard, there's like this tiny little console. It's a tiny little console, like almost like if you just like you can fit you can fit one crumble cookie in this console because I put one in there. So I know it's exactly as big as a crumble cookie, but that's how big it is. It's a tiny little pod, but it's a great little spot to shove extra stuff. And then there's that very open floor. And then you have more room underneath the actual center console next to you. There's like this part that's on the floor. And then there's a tiny little bin that opens on the top that's really thin. It's not very deep, but like you could toss your wallet in there, or your sunglasses or the key fob or whatever. So I like how the storage is laid out inside, and it's an EV. So when you hit the accelerator, what do you call it?
Hit the accelerator.
Accelerator is like too many. Accelerator. That's five syllables. We need a short word. You can say gas and it's one thing, but I can't say gas. When you hit the electric, can I say that? When you hit the pedal, it goes, especially
hit
when
the
you
play
put it
pedal.
In. Hit the play pedal. That
and
works.
And the pause pedal, which is the one on the other
okay,
side.
Okay, I'm going to go with play pedal. When you hit the play pedal, this really goes. And especially there's a couple of drive modes to it. When you put it in sport mode, not only do you get a nifty little red graphic on your screen so that you know that you're in sport mode, you can feel the difference. It accelerates even more aggressively. You know, you really get that experience of that, all that torque, that instant EV torque. If you like that feeling, if you like the feeling, if you've driven gas vehicles and you like that feeling, a really powerful engine that has a ton of horsepower and chugs a ton of gas, but really gets you going, this does the same thing without the engine, without the gas. So it's fun to drive. And I actually had to drive it in some kind of crappy weather. There was a lot of rain and wind when I was driving the other day. And it handles really nicely. It's always a good test. You know, winter driving is one thing, and this has all-wheel drive. So you could be driving it in the winter and probably be pretty good in it. But even just on really wet roads and windy weather, it doesn't have to be wintertime. That all-wheel drive kind of keeps you a little bit more stable, keeps you from hydroplaning, keeps you from feeling like you're fighting against that sort of standing water on a road when the rain is coming down so fast that it can't roll off the road quick enough. That was really nice to drive in that and still feel very confident. I appreciated that. And it's going to get you really good fuel economy. So your MPGE is 98. Like, oh, couldn't you eke out two more? Couldn't we gotten
it's
that 100?
Harder. Try harder, Hyundai.
Try harder, Hyundai.
Not good enough.
I feel like somewhere there's an engineer that's like, oh, we're so close. Like they just missed it. So 98 MPG. So you're going to get great fuel economy is it still fuel economy? I don't know.
Energy efficiency.
See, we need new terms. The new terms. So that's a great thing. You also get a pretty long range, and I wrote down the range. So with this one, with the all-wheel drive, it's 265 miles. So I think I've charged this. I plugged it in last night only because the parking that was in this garage was limited and I would have had to park way far away, but there was EV parking right there by the entrance if I would just plug in my car and charge it. So I did that. Otherwise, I wouldn't have needed to charge it yet. Because 265 miles is a good amount of range for just driving around town. You don't need to charge it all the time. So I appreciated that. And it has, if you're going with the rear wheel drive, it goes up over 303 miles. I mean, that takes a little time to drive that much unless you have some significant driving planned in your day. And it also charges relatively quickly. It can do that 350 kilowatt charging. And I think it's like 18 minutes if you can find a charger that will do that for you, that says it will do it and then actually does it, which is my beef with
all of this. Are you implying that there are some chargers that do not deliver what they promise?
I might perhaps maybe kind of sort of be implying exactly that. Yes.
But there's no particular brands that would fit into that category, right?
No.
Pretty sure it's all brands, to be honest. No.
Some have burned me more than others. But although, you know what, we had a really weird experience. I should mention this. So the charger that we used in this parking garage was a juice box charger, and you had to download an app. I've never used that one before. So my husband downloads the whole app. He's like, and I literally feel like it took us like a solid 10 minutes to get this set up to use this charger. It asked for so many pieces of information. And as I'm standing there in this parking garage and it was cold and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm almost ready to say, forget it. I'll just drive back up to the 10th floor or whatever and park up there and take, because it just took so long. I mean, now it's set up, but man, the process should be quicker. You shouldn't have to stand there for 10 minutes plugging in information to, and then it was very weird. This particular one, their app is terrible at communicating information. So it looks like it's charged. The little voice of God that comes out of your Ioniq 5 that says vehicle charging, it like worked. Okay. So I know that it's charging, but it's still, as of this morning, has not given us a single bit of information about how much it cost, how long it charged, anything. The app is like, you have no charging. I'm like, pretty sure I do, because it's actually showing on my credit card, but the app is not giving any of that information.
And that's the whole thing, is that there shouldn't have to be an app. There should be a credit card reader.
Yep. It wouldn't, there was
charging thing.
There was like, you know, so that you could, but it wouldn't work. So
it wouldn't work. Yeah. Most of them don't work. That's the other thing. The ones that have it, they're like, oh, it doesn't work. And they're just like, they're not inclined to fix it, because now they're going to have all your data.
Exactly. So we, you know, so first we tried, you know, scanning with the phone, didn't work. I'm like, let me just try my actual credit card. Like maybe it's being finicky. Nope. Actual credit card won't scan either. So we go with the whole app, and my husband was irritated enough this morning. Like, I'm deleting this. I'm not using this. I'm like, but what if you need it again? He's like, they're not giving me information. They're not giving me how much I paid. They're not telling me exactly how long it charged. It looks like it's still processing, but there's nothing processing. He deleted. He got that cranky. He got cranky. He was a little bit cranky pants about it.
I don't blame him.
And I can't blame him. But that's just another, like, even though it technically worked and it charged my vehicle, on the back end of it, you're left as a consumer going, what did you do? How long did I charge? What did I pay? You have no idea. I only know because I can see the credit card charge on my credit card. It shouldn't be that way. The app should tell me something.
Yeah, no, it's no.
That was my rant against the juice box. So now now they're on my, I was going to say something else. They're on my list. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Your shift list.
Yes, hey, that.
There we go.
That. Yes.
Hey-o.
Hey-o.
Thank you. Here all week.
Yeah. So that was so I've enjoyed driving this. I like it. Once again, I'm pro EV. I am anti current EV charging network still.
Pro EV.
Anti
pro just charge it at home, because you're like, I'll forget. Yeah.
Pro EV, pro charge at home, anti everybody who can't get their chargers to work in a way that is not seamless. I felt like I could have gassed up a car four times in the time it took me to stand there. And
just to put just to get the app. And then sometimes you're you're like, oh, there's no network here.
Right.
So now
it was just another fail. I know it, and I harp on it because this is everyday experience for regular people. You know, this is what you live with if you're in an area where there aren't chargers all over the place, and there aren't really here. I was surprised to see one in a parking garage, honestly.
Well, you know, if you had been driving the car that I had, that I'll get to in a minute, you probably would have had to put gas in it four times in that amount of time. But we'll come to that in a minute.
I just saw what you're driving. Yes, I would have.
did you say what the price was on the Ioniq 5 that you had?
The price on the Ioniq 5 was all in, it was $55,920. What do you think?
Fancy one.
Yeah, it was the, it's not too long, 2022 Ioniq 5 limited all-wheel drive. So it's a fancy one. What do you think?
It's as fancy as it gets. Anyway,
as fancy as it gets. Yeah. What do you think the destination was, the handling?
$1,295, just because that's what the Kia was.
I'm going to go with $1.
You win, because it was
$1,225. Oh!
Price is Right rules win again.
It was $25. It was $75 less
than
the gas
less.
Vehicle.
I know. Isn't that weird? So, there you go.
All right.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. Well, the car that I had, the only plugs on it were the USB ports, USB-C ports on the inside of the car. No plugs on the outside. It was painted in electric blue, which I thought was a lovely color. It was a beautiful shade of blue. But that's about as electric as this thing gets. It was the 2023 Cadillac CT5V Blackwing with the 6-speed manual transmission.
Oh my gosh, a manual. Yes. Yay.
Manual with a 3 pedals and clutch and a pause pedal and a go pedal and a shifter that you actually have to move if you want to go anywhere. So it was lovely. It was this was a wonderful car to drive. How
was the clutch? Where did it grab? Did it grab pretty high?
No, it was probably about a third of the way down.
All right. See, I think the clutches that go out with these things, because the one I had that was the grab was super high. And so like the first time I'm like on a hill, I live on a very slight hill. And so when I left the clutch, I'm like, am I going to install this on a hill first time I drive it? It was pretty high. So I think I think they just,
there's probably some adjustment in there.
Yeah. Journalist. Don't know how to drive.
Stupid journalist. Yeah. What do we know?
I have been a fan of this car and its predecessors going back to 2008 when Cadillac launched the second generation version of what was then called the CTS-V. So the first CTS-V on the first generation CTS, that was just a naturally aspirated small block V8. I think it was around 450 horsepower or something like that. For the second generation,
whatevs.
You know, they developed two supercharged V8s, the LSA and the LS9. The LS9 was the version that went into the Corvette, the C6 Corvette ZR1. The LSA was a just ever so slightly lower power version of that was used for the CTS-V. And I got to go on the launch drive program for that in New York, in upstate New York. We drove from New York City to what's the name of that place now?
Canada?
No. the
we
racetrack.
Need a hint.
No, the it was, you know, like a country club racetrack near New York.
Monticello? Oh,
Monticello, yes. Monticello.
Ding, ding, ding. There we go. Took me a second. I got it.
And that was when it was just opening. So like they didn't have most of the facilities done. The track was done. They had the garage and, you know, but they didn't have all the stuff that they have there now. So it was brand new at the time. And this was the first drive program that had been done there. And we got to spend half a day driving the CTS-Vs on that track. It was fantastic. I always loved that car. And I like this one just as much. You know, it's a nice, reasonable size. You know, it's not too big. I like the CT4V Blackwing as well. It's a little smaller. But the supercharged 6.2 liter V8 that's in this thing is just fantastic. 668 horsepower, 659 foot pounds of torque, makes a fantastic noise when you step on it. As we've said before, you know, that's the thing I'll miss the most about, you know, going electric. You know, I mean, the electric vehicles have, you know, all that low end torque that's even better than this one is capable of. But there's just, you know, that visceral feel of that slight little bit of V8 rumble, the vibration and the sound and everything. And I also like the interactive part of shifting, you know, matching the clutch and the shifter and everything. You know, this one does offer automatic rev matching system, which, you know, if you're not quite as comfortable with driving a manual, you know, you can press that button and it'll automatically blip the throttle for you and all that stuff when you're shifting. But I like, you know, the challenge of, you know, trying to get it perfect every time. You know, and
did you get it perfect every time, Sam?
Not 100%, but pretty close.
Pretty close, like 99.8,
yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, probably. You know, 99%. Yeah.
Okay, that's an acceptable percentage. You can continue to be an automotive journalist.
Yeah, and I never stalled it for what it's worth. You know, even on a hill. there were some shifts that were, you know, just you get that little bit of jerk there. You know, didn't quite get the revs just right, but close enough. So I had a very fun time with this car. The one I had was equipped with the optional carbon ceramic brakes, which are a $9,000 option. And, you know, unless you're planning to take your Blackwing to a track, you probably don't need them. But
do you think that, do many people spring for that? Do you think, I guess if you're getting the Blackwing, maybe you are
probably
just kind of crazy excited, even if you never drive that
way. I think a lot of people think they will, and then like 5% do.
Yeah.
So if they sell 100 Blackwings, 5 people will take it to track once.
And how many people do you think pay for the ceramic brakes?
Probably a lot more than that.
Probably,
you're spending this kind of money on a performance car. Yeah, throw in those carbon ceramic brakes. Yeah, take them.
That squeak when you drive.
Like, why not? Sure.
At least
put it in there.
At least you never have to worry about them fading on you. You know. So
they do squeak though.
They do
so
squeak.
You know,
yeah.
Carbon ceramic brake always they squeak. Just
but they,
know that.
But they feel great.
Yeah.
You know, there's that. The jet black interior with black accents was and leather seats, $2,900, $2,890. It did have the performance data and video recorder built in, which uses the forward facing camera for the ADAS. You can turn that on, you know, if you are at the track or somewhere else and you just want to record data. That's $1,600. See, there's a few other options. This one, you know, because it had the manual transmission, didn't have Super Cruise or lane keeping assist or things like that. It did have just standard cruise control, no adaptive cruise control on this one, which again was fine. 10-inch infotainment screen. You know, when you buy a car like this, you're not buying it because you want something that's particularly fuel efficient.
you don't think
the manual transmission Blackwing is rated at 13 city, 21 highway, 15 miles per gallon combined. I actually did manage, because I did a fair bit of highway driving, going to Auburn Hills and back and a couple other places. And so I actually did manage to get about 17 miles per gallon, which surprised me. It was better than I was anticipating. Yeah, if you've looked at a window sticker in recent years, you know, one of the things they have on there is in the EPA fuel economy and environment section, they have the fuel economy and greenhouse gas rating.
Oh gosh, is it bad
it's
for
the
this?
1 to 10 scale?
Negative 5.
No, it's a 2.
My Ioniq 5 was a 10.
Yes, I know.
Yeah.
Because there's no greenhouse gases from
exactly.
it.
Exactly. So together we were like right smack in the middle. You just need one of your car, one of my car, and your nice happy medium.
Yeah.
And you got a Jetta.
So all in, this one came to $107,830. Any guesses on the destination charge?
1495. I don't know.
1800.
Ooh, you both lose. $1,395.
I was closer though. I yeah, almost
you were
got
closer.
It. I was a lot closer
yeah,
than Robbie.
We're not going to the showcase showdown though.
I'm calling it a win for me. You didn't beat me.
I really enjoyed driving this car. The seats in it are fantastic. The shift feel is really good. I had no issues with the clutch. You know, the torque of this thing is just it's intoxicating. You know, it sounds so good. So you know, if you're looking for a high performance midsize sedan, you know, that can be a daily driver, you know, despite its, you know, crazy performance, it is absolutely a car that you can live with on a daily basis, you know, assuming you can afford the gas. But it's absolutely something that is very livable. You know, there's a reasonable size back seat, good trunk space. You know, so it's a good place to spend time.
Yeah.
So
that's nice.
I can recommend it if you're in the market for this type of vehicle.
It's a good car.
It is. All right. We drove some other stuff, some, you know, not regular review cars, but some stuff that is first drive opportunities. Shall we start with, let's see, what's the embargo time for the Hyundai? Is that Tuesday?
Oh God, I gotta look. Hold on a second. Talk about something that's not embargoed, and I'll Google.
Okay. Well, let's start with the 2024 Mazda CX-90, which is Mazda's new three-row utility. It's the replacement for the CX-9. They added an extra zero on the end, changed a couple of other things. Nicole, you and I both drove this thing this past week.
We did.
What did you think of the CX-90?
I liked it. I thought it was good. The day we drove it was pretty sketchy because they had, surprise, torrential rains that were flooding the roads and doing flash floods in San Francisco. So we got to drive it in, like, again, literally bad conditions. But I liked driving it. I thought it was, I liked both the hybrid and the gas. I like the hybrid engine better, I think.
Yeah.
What did you think?
I agree. You know, I mean, it definitely reaffirmed my opinion that for piston internal combustion engines, the inline six is the ideal form factor. It's smooth. It's powerful. It's a wonderful engine.
Mm-hmm.
But if I was spending money and buying one of these things, I would probably go for the plug-in hybrid. So, you know, to refresh everybody's memory from when we first talked about this thing in January, late January, I think, or early February, the CX-90, they've gone from a transverse four-cylinder, you know, sort of front-wheel drive architecture on the CX-9 to a longitudinal mounted design, you know, that's kind of rear-wheel drive biased. They have a new 3.3-liter inline turbocharged six, and they also have a plug-in hybrid, which uses their 2.5-liter naturally aspirated engine that they've had that's in most Mazdas these days, along with a 100-kilowatt electric motor between the engine and the transmission, and that one gives I think it's 26 miles of all electric range on a full charge. They actually have pretty similar power levels. There's two versions of the six. One is tuned to run on regular fuel. The other one's tuned to run on premium gas. And that one does like 363 horsepower, I think. I'll have to double check that. And then the other one, the other one is closer to, I think it's about 280, 290 horsepower for the base engine. And then the hybrid falls in between there. And with the engine and the electric motor, it gives you about 359 horsepower, I think, combined.
I think that, I mean, but it was sort of like, they're both very responsive and I like driving them both. I just felt like the hybrid just gives you a little bit more oomph. I don't know. And I wonder too, for me, if it's the weight of the battery. I know it's not like it's not driving a full EV where you have this gigantic battery, but still it adds.
It's about 200 pounds heavier.
Right. It adds a little bit of weight and it just feels, I don't know, sturdier, like more planted to me for that little bit of extra weight. I like how it maybe changes the dynamics of how the car feels. I felt a difference between the two.
Yeah, no. And you know, that instant electric torque off the line, you know, you can feel that slight bit of extra responsiveness right off the line. You know, even the best internal combustion engines, you know, as much torque as they might have, there's always right. that slight little bit of delay there before it really kicks in. So with the, you know, with the hybrid, you get, you know, the electric motor, you know, and it's 134 horsepower motor. So it's a pretty powerful motor.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, instant torque right from zero RPM. So you feel that responsiveness right off the line with it. And whenever you're accelerating, there's no lag at all with that one.
Yeah, I really liked it. And I also, I've always thought that Mazda interiors, I think the interiors, did you check out the one that they had as the static display, Sam, that sort of had that like bookbinding kind of trim on the dashboard? Did you see that?
The hanging stitch?
Yeah.
Design. Yeah. We saw that one. I don't know if you went to the reveal event in January.
I did not. I skipped on that. I did not go to the reveal event.
They highlighted that there. They talked a lot about that there, and it's really pretty looking.
It's really impressive. And I I always think about how pretty it is. And I'm like, how durable is this? So I was actually looking to see, is this something, you know, how you get the weirdest things caught on things getting in and out of a car. I'm like, could you catch that? Cause it's actually think of a really thick piece of stitching or thread. It's you can feel it with your finger. I'm like, could you catch that? But it's really securely in there. I feel like it's going to hold up to the wear and tear that you get of getting in and out of your car and grabbing a bag or grabbing as you catch things or whatever. But it makes it look really very upscale. That and the sort of Alcantara finish that was all over the one, the hybrid that I drove back.
That's actually not Alcantara. It's not suede.
It's suede. Yeah.
It's actual suede.
It's suede. So it's stunning. Oh my God. It's gorgeous.
Did you have the caramel colored interior?
Yes.
Yeah.
The caramel,
that's what I had.
Oh my God.
On the Turbo S.
It was beautiful. And I was like, I just want the whole car, all of it. The steering wheel.
But you definitely don't want little kids in there.
No, but I want my whole car covered in it. I want put your kids in there and be like, just forget what the back seat's going to look like with that stuff. Don't look back there.
Don't ever let them in the front seat.
Don't let them up front where they can touch your dashboard with sticky fingers and stuff. Mm-hmm. Although I'd like to think, because they're using this in an application where it's in a car, it's not, just something, clothing or something, that it would be whatever particular fabrication of the suede and treatments they do, that it would be a little bit more robust, because you're going to open the doors and rain's going to get on it and snow is going to get on it. Just opening the window to, grab a drink at the drive-through, if it's raining, there's water everywhere. So it has to be a little bit more robust than the average suede. Otherwise that door, that door sill there, or the, where your arm would go, it's going to look like a disaster. And I can't imagine they'd set us up for failure like that.
I would hope not. We'll see. We'll see when we get one for a week long review.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just pulled up the numbers. So the base turbo is 280 horsepower, 332 pounds feet of torque. The Turbo S is 340 horsepower and 369 pounds feet of torque. And then the plug in hybrid is 329 horsepower and 363. So about the same torque as the Turbo S, slightly less power. But it does feel a little more responsive most of the time.
It does. It really does. I had more fun driving the hybrid. If I was picking between the two, hybrid 100% is where I would go.
Yeah. And, on that leg of the drive with the hybrid, I drove it in the afternoon part of the drive, coming back from the lunch stop back to San Francisco. They had us go, through an area of rural, Sonoma County, might have been into Marin at that point, where we got to try it out on some curvy back roads and have some fun with it there. Then a little, stretch of highway. And one of the things they have on there, they've got modes, you've got your normal sport, an EV mode. And then there's also a button next to that for charge. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to want to have your battery fully charged, if you're coming back into the city, for example, and you want to drive electrically in the city, you can hit the charge button. And they have the same thing on the Jeep 4xEs, where as you're driving, it'll run the engine slightly harder, use the motor as a generator to top off your battery while you're driving. Mm-hmm. And then when we hit the San Rafael Richmond Bridge, they suggested we switch to EV mode at that point. And so, drove the next 24 miles across the Bay Bridge, around and back across the Bay Bridge into San Francisco on electricity alone. And I still had 14% charge left when I got to the pier, where we were taking some photos of it. You can, 25 to 27, 28 miles, of electric range, it's pretty reasonable.
Yeah. Our drive route was a little bit different than yours because of the flooding. So I would have had the same route, but the people who came up that second leg, there was water that was well over a foot, maybe 2 feet deep, that people drove through. My PSA, turn around, don't drown. Be careful driving through floodwaters like that, folks. We still had some of the twisties, but they couldn't quite give us your drive route because they're like, we don't want you to drown. So we have modified. So we still had some back roads, but I think you got a little bit more cool back road twisties than we did. But it was still quite fun and it still handled beautifully. And I would have been happy to drive it further. Like some cars I'm ready to get out of at the end of a drive day. That one, I think, no, I could drive this a little bit more.
Yeah. You know, it felt very, you know, comfortable and relaxed after, you know, what, 2.5, 5 hours of driving.
Yeah. It was a lot of driving,
you know, all together that day. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's, you know, it's a very pleasant car, very pleasant vehicle. Pricing, ranges from, let me find it again here. It starts at, about $41,000, including delivery, for the 3.3 turbo select, which is the base model, ranges up to, about $61,000 for the Turbo S Premium Plus, which is, I think, what we were driving. Mm-hmm. And then the plug-in hybrid ranges between $48,000, and $57,000-$58,000, which, you know, when you look at, you know, the way Mazda has tried to move kind of up market, get a little more premium over the last decade, you know, you could compare these to, you know, to mainstream competitors like the Telluride and the Palisade, and the prices are, you know, perhaps just slightly higher than those, you know, by, yep, you know, $1,000 to $2,000, you know, for comparable trims. But when you look at the, you know, the style and the interior, and everything, and, you know, this vehicle could really compete, legitimately compete against the likes of, you know, an Audi Q7 or a Volvo, XC90. And those vehicles, both of those, start at $60,000 and go up, yeah, from there. So, you know, it's a pretty good value when you're comparing it against the premium segment.
I really do think that they, and they're sort of like, we're not really a luxury car, but we're pushing into that territory, that Mazda is doing a fantastic job, both in terms of what the vehicles look like, how they drive, all of those sort of characteristics you think of like luxury things, they do it. But then their pricing, yeah, it comes up a little, but it doesn't go all the way up. Like, okay, we're not a luxury brand. We're not going to put our pricing there. We're also not, you know, a bottom of the basement brand. So our pricing's not there. It doesn't feel like they're overpriced. People look at it like, oh, that's more. I'm like, only a skosh, only for some of the trims. And when you look at the interior that you're getting, suddenly you're like, well, that's not unreasonable at all. That's actually a fantastic deal for how good it looks.
Yeah. Things, you know, when they revealed the CX-90 in January, you know, hero color that they were using was this new shade of red, this darker red that they call artisan red. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it looks really good. You know, it looks very sophisticated, for, you know, a premium product.
Yes.
But thankfully, you can actually get the CX-90 in Soul Crystal Red.
Yes, you can. I asked them, like, this is really pretty, guys, but what about the other one? They're like, oh, no, you can get the other one. Yeah. I was like, yes.
So it's an extra $595, but it's worth it.
Yes. Oh my God, that red is so pretty. People tell me, oh no, all reds are the same. They're not.
No.
This red is, this, see? No. We all say no. This red is so good.
Yeah. The artisan red is more like a burgundy color.
It's sort of like your mild mannered, like responsible adult red. And mm-hmm. then the soul red is like the wee yeehaw, like have fun with it red.
That's the true Mazda red.
Right. That's the true Mazda red. The other one's like, we have to have this for those of you who are trying to be mild mannered and do your adulting thing. No, don't do it. Don't be mild mannered. Don't do the adulting. Get the soul crystal metallic red instead. It's so good.
All right. So did you figure out the embargo, yes, date for the
embargo on Hyundai? We're fine. It's actually Monday, April 3rd at 12:01 a.m.
Oh, perfect. Then let's talk about that next.
Yes.
You two both drove that, I think, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did. I think Robbie should go. It should be Robbie's turn. I've been blah, 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 blah about the Mazda. Robbie, go.
So Hyundai made an EV, and it's very nice.
There's a shock.
That's a shock. No, it's just, I think.
Next thing you'll be telling us, it's a good value.
It is a good value. It's impressive because you're like, okay, they made the Ioniq 5. This is a really nice car. You drive it around. You're like, oh, they just put a different body on top of that and it'll be fine. No, it's just so like the acceleration curve is so smooth. Just ridiculous. Like there's just like, It's like silk. It's everything about this. Like the steering is really nice. Like everything about it is really, really impressive for a car that starts at $41,600.
It's just not pricey.
It's bonkers for an EV. It's because you get in it, and you drive it around. You're like, well, they didn't even have to do this. They could have just. They didn't even have to like make it better as a smoother driving vehicle than the Ioniq 5. And they did.
They did.
Which makes you like, well, what's next? What are they going to do next?
And they have to keep upping the game. Like, okay.
They're like, oh no, now what do we do? So, having said that, there is an issue.
What's your issue?
Is that the headroom issue. This is the same issue that Mercedes had, because if you look at this vehicle, it's the same sort of like, you know, that little like, you know, speed bump, essentially just a speed bump on the road for drag coefficients. But in the back of the EQS, which, you know, you should have lots of head and leg room because it's an S class. If you're taller than me, if you're taller than 6'3", you don't have issues with headroom. Same thing with this vehicle, except it's also in the front seat. In the front seat, my head was very close.
Really?
To the roof. So
it does have a very sloping.
Yeah. Release.
Like if you look at it in profile, you can really see it. I actually did have someone say to me, they were looking at pictures, not even photos that I took. And she said, is this really as sloped as it looked like? It almost looks, did somebody use like a fancy lens taking that picture? And I looked at it. I'm like, no,
that's just how it is.
Nope. I think I'm like, yeah, that pretty much looks like how it is.
Yeah. So if you're sitting in the back seat, if the seats were just reclined just another few degrees, it would be less of an issue. But if you are tall, if you're a basketball player, which means you're taller than me, this might not be the car for you. If you have a tall torso, I have friends who are not as tall as me, but they have tall torsos. They have long torsos. This might not be the vehicle. Yeah. So it's, you know, if you have not as long legs, I'm just legs and arms. I'm like a,
you're like those little, those guys outside the little floppy.
Yeah.
Guys
just like flopping my arms about like. So let me pull my sleeves back up after moving my arms. But outside of that, you know, I like the trunk, the way the trunk opens, because it doesn't open like a regular trunk. It opens even wider, even though it's just a regular trunk. It's not a hatchback. It opens wide enough so it's easier to get things into the back. We threw some stuff back there. It was fine. No issues. If you're a tall person, you're going to have some issues. God damn it, Hyundai.
That's why they also make the Ioniq 5. Ioniq 7.
Ioniq 5, you're going to have plenty of headroom and legroom. That car is, but if you're a basketball player, get the Ioniq 5. If you're a regular person who doesn't care about, who would rather get more range and have a sedan versus a very tall hatchback, you get the Ioniq 6. I like that they have put, it feels like more buttons in it as they move from the Ioniq 5, which means buttons,
actual
yay,
buttons.
Yay, buttons.
We're all about the buttons in the S.
We're all about the buttons. They did move. It's like a Stellantis vehicle. They did move the window controls to the center console. So it's like you're driving a Fiat. And they did that because they're like, oh, we have this really nice design, which it is. It looks like a really cool design along the side. It looks really cool inside.
It messed me up, though. The window thing did mess me up. Like somebody was walking over and I'm like, what? How? We? Center. Center, hold on.
Yeah.
I'll roll the window down once I find the button.
And as someone who had a Fiat for like 3 years, I don't think I think you sort of get used to it.
I don't get you. In my husband's Jeep, I still go to reach for the door, and it's like the Wrangler, the most like, duh, it's not there. And every single time I go for the door and then have to come back.
Single time. It has the two spoilers on the back, like it's a 911. So you're like, ooh.
It kind of reminded me of the old, some of the Fords from the 80s, like the Mercury XR4 and the Mustang SVO.
Oh, yeah, the
with the twin spoilers.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, it does. It is that. It's funner to say 911, but yeah, it's totally Mercury. Yeah, no, it has a look. I don't know if it's going to be, I don't think it's going to be as well, I don't know if universally praised. I don't think it's going to be accepted as much as the Ioniq 5.
Why?
I
just curious. That sounded like a very aggressive why. Why, Robbie?
Why? I don't know. I just think it looks nicer than what Mercedes has done with the EQ lineup with the sedans. I think it looks nicer than that. I do think it's a little, I don't know. Maybe people like it. I feel like it's just not going to be as well as accepted as what we've seen with the Ioniq 5, just because the Ioniq 5 is so sort of out there. I think it really has to do with that slopiness.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think the slopiness is going to turn some people off. Yeah,
I think that's going to turn some people off. Mm-hmm. But if you get inside and you drive, you're like, oh man, this is it's like how the kids say butter. I don't know what the kids say. What do kids enjoy? Mayonnaise
do
now?
They say
I don't know.
Butter? I don't.
No, it's an aioli. They don't eat mayonnaise anymore. Aioli.
That's aioli, man.
Aioli. What's interesting is you're getting a ton of different like trim levels. So you have a two battery sizes, which is nice. So you know you can decide how much of a battery do you need. There's the 53 kilowatt hour and then the 77.4 kilowatt hour, and you get either rear wheel drive or all wheel drive. So the whole thing, you know, it's you get all these different. You know, where you want to spend your money. The lowest, the least amount of range you're going to get is from that 55 with the rear wheel drive. And that's 240 miles. So that's the boo, you're not going to go that far. But then you can go all the way up to 361 miles if you get the larger battery with rear wheel drive. That's 361 miles. Where are you going? But you can go there, and the price difference between those two.
If you just want to, you know, only have to charge once a week. Yeah.
So
you're too lazy to plug it in every night.
Yeah. So the price difference between those two, between the standard range rear wheel drive and the long range rear wheel drive, is $4,000. So $41,600 for the standard range is 240 miles, and $45,500. For the 361 miles, so you get 121 more miles for $4,000.
I'll take that.
Yeah.
And then within all that, there's all these different ranges and you know how much power you get and so if you're the kind of person who's like, you know what, I don't really drive that often, or I don't drive that far very often, you know, I might as well just save the money, or you know, I can get the all wheel drive with the. With the standard, anything for whatever you want, Hyundai's gonna offer it up in the Ioniq 6.
I like the Ioniq 6. I thought it was good for the same reasons that Robbie said, and I did notice that I think the toughest thing is going to be that rear design. I think some people are going to find it too small. Weird. And I don't even think, Robbie, you need to be super tall. Like, I think you could be more average heightish and still run into that little bit of it, even if your head's not actually hitting the top and the back. That sense of like, I don't have any room here. You know, where you
it's weird because I didn't feel cramped, and then I put my hand above my head. I'm like, oh,
yeah. See, that's, and I can see people doing that. Like, oh, this is a little bit more snug. But I mean, aside from that, if you're sitting in front, it's super comfortable. I found the seats comfortable. I found everything about it. I love the interior. I talked about all the things I liked on the Ioniq 5. The Ioniq 6 does many of the same things, but does it more. You know, they've changed the styling. It's a little more slick. They've updated it. It handles everything. It's just literally like an iteration forward from the 5. And having gone, like, I've driven the 5 before, went into the 6, we just did that. And then to have the 5 again this week, I'm like, oh yeah, they really did a good job with the 6. Like, they really good. It's striking. Like, the 5 is great, but now that I've driven the 6, I'm like, oh my gosh, they really made that better.
You know, I talked about the with the Kia, but on the Hyundai's driver assistance system has always been like, it works. This is the new version. It is in this vehicle. It's so much better. It's just so much smoother. It's better at lane keep assist. It's just they threw everything at this car.
Yeah, they really did. And I think they needed to because the 5 was so well received. You like, okay, you can't just do another 5 and put a 6 on the end of it. You've got to make it better, which is hard when it's not like there was this huge time frame between the release of these two vehicles. You know, they're relatively close together. So I'm a fan, but I've always,
you know, it's interesting, you know, that they have made them look so fundamentally different. You know, they're not sticking with just one sort of common, I mean, aside from the pixels, you know, you got the pixels, mm-hmm. but aside from that, there's really not much else about the 5 and the 6.
They have four wheels and a steering wheel. That's the only thing.
That these are part of the same family.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and I think that's interesting. You know, it's an interesting approach on Hyundai's part, because, you know, they could have basically taken, you know, the basic design themes of the Ioniq 5 and slap a trunk on the back of it, you know, and say, okay, we're good. That's a sedan, you know, and
boom,
they didn't.
There you go.
You know, they did. They went in a completely different direction with the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Hyundai engineers should be commended for what they've done with this vehicle.
Good job.
Except for the headroom.
Except for the what? The headroom.
When's the Ioniq 6 going to be available?
So everything but the standard range rear wheel drive version will be available this spring. That version, that's the cheapest one. That one will be available in the summer.
Okay. Excellent. All right. Let's stick with electric, but go off in a little bit different direction. GM made an announcement the other day. I got a message from somebody at GM on Thursday, I think, or Wednesday, and said, "Hey, you know, we've got some news coming on Friday. You know, would you like to talk to, you know, the head of our chief digital officer in advance and get the story?" I said, "Sure." And so we talked and put up the story on Friday. It got some negative feedback. So GM has made
you should be a politician. It got some negative feedback.
So GM has decided, well, first going back, you know, for the last couple of years when GM has launched new models, they've included a new generation infotainment system that is based off Android Automotive. So Android is running the whole thing. It's got Google Automotive Services in there. So you got Google Maps, Google Assistant, the Play Store. So you can download apps directly on the system. You don't have to plug in your phone. So GM's decided that starting with the Blazer this summer, the Blazer EV this summer, and following with the Equinox and the Sierra and the Celestiq and all the other EVs coming, they have decided to no longer support smartphone projection on their EVs. So both Android Auto, which interestingly enough still works on top of Android Automotive, and Apple CarPlay will no longer be supported. You'll have to use the built-in system. The rationale for this is that they're trying to create a better, more consistent user experience for customers. Especially for EV customers. So, you know, when you've got stuff running off the phone and being projected onto the screen, you know, you have no real control over any integration with the apps that are running on there, you know, from the automaker's perspective. You know, if you're running it on the vehicle, you know, in the vehicle system, you can do things like, for example, in Google Maps, you know, they're going to integrate their smart routing algorithms. They can integrate a lot of real-time vehicle sensor data with the apps that are running on the vehicle and do better routing, you know, help you to find, you know, charging stations, be able to find charging stations that, you know, are known to actually be functioning, that are available, things like that. You know, to help pay for them, you know, today, you know, doing that, you've got to use, you know, a bunch of different apps, you know, to figure out, okay, where's their charge point, charger, where's Electrify America, where's Blink, you know, and whatever else. And there's apps like a better route planner, you know, and it's all kind of clunky and disconnected. And what they're trying to do is create a more seamless experience for the customers. So that's their rationale. Go ahead.
So
I'd like to hear your thoughts.
So the idea that they, well, we want to make a better system. Good. You should have a better system. good for you. That mm-hmm. you should have had a better system with the Chevy Bolt. But at the expense of what people are used to, what people want to use in their vehicles, and people want to use CarPlay, they want to use Android Auto in their vehicles. And they might not use it for routing, they might use it for other things. I mean, every automaker is like, yeah, we can do text messaging with an iPhone. No, you can't. It never works. Or, you know, we could do this. There are a bunch of little apps that are available via Android Auto or via CarPlay that you're just not going to get anymore. You're just not going to get that. You're not going to get the weird podcasting app. You're not going to get this. If they decide, well, it's we know I like to use the This American Life app so I can listen to all those little podcasts. Okay. But if they're like, oh, we're not going to put that on there. Okay. But you can use Spotify. I'm like, but what if I don't want to use Spotify? What if I want to use Bandcamp? Because I buy a lot of music from bands that sell stuff through Bandcamp. Yeah, we got Spotify. Okay. But Bandcamp's available on CarPlay and Enter. Hey, we got Spotify. What if I'm going to use Apple Music? Hey, we got Spotify.
Spotify.
So, oh my God. We have Google Music. Like, wait, was that still a thing? Like, no, not really.
There's YouTube Music.
There's YouTube Music. And so you run into this situation where that's fine. You know, you should, this, all of this should have happened years ago. I mean, they should have seen what Tesla has been doing years ago and just done that. And it's, you know, working with Google to make that work with Android Automotive. That's outstanding. But you know, Polestar did it with Android Automotive and they worked hard to get CarPlay on there. It took them forever and we all made fun of them. And now it's finally there. I mean, the idea that you have in Toyota for a while didn't want to add
right. Everyone digged them for that. They're like, you can't. It was
they didn't, and they told me they didn't want to give up real estate to these tech companies. They're like, we don't want to give up this real estate to these tech companies. They're like, yeah, but it's what people are making decisions based on this because some people just need something to go from point A to point B. And they just want a utility, and in that utility, they want a thing that they like and something that they're comfortable with. Plus, this whole idea that like, what we got to do is integration, doing this other thing. No, you just want data because they don't get and data. They want to sell your data. They want your data. They want as much information as possible because that is a revenue stream.
And see, that's exactly how it feels. And I think the thing is, it's like you can give the public. Everybody, all of the, oh, we're just doing this out of the goodness of our heart to make your experience. No, you're not. Nobody believes that. Nobody believes that.
Everyone looks at it and goes,
this is not because like, like you're this altruistic thing. It's like, no one thinks you're that. Well, some people think you're the evil empire, but most people don't think you're the evil empire.
Not anymore.
Nobody believes
GM's the evil empire anymore.
Not anymore. Yeah, but it's just, it's, there's, but this is just, it leads into other things. It's like, don't take away something. Like if you wanted to do this, honestly, where I think every OEM, you did a crummy job when infotainment was first a thing, right? It was never easy to use. It was always tricky. It was not good. Everyone was frustrated with it. Hence Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. Hey, they did a great job. This is fantastic. Put this in your cars. So we all got used to this. We all got used to this, to doing it this way, to using something that we're super, super, super familiar with because we all use our iPhones all the time or Android phones all the time. And now you're like, wait, now we figured it out. Years later, you guys, wait, we got this. Nobody wants to go. It's like, no, I trusted you 7 years ago or whatever, and you gave me garbage. Now you promise me that you're going to give me something good. What if you're still giving me garbage? And now I can't even get back to what I know and love and I'm used to and I'm comfortable with. I mean, maybe long-term strategy. I get it. There's all this long-term strategy for making money, but I don't think people are going to like this. I shared your story, Sam, because I was so surprised they were doing this like right now. And I said, I shared it. I have universally from everybody who commented to me on Twitter when I shared it, I won't buy these products. This is literally a deal breaker for me. I will not do this. This like nobody likes this idea. Nobody.
I have a lot of normal people, like people who aren't like car people are like replying to me and be like, no.
Yeah.
No, because they're like I was thinking about buying a GM product, but I won't buy it because of this.
Yeah.
And I don't think they realize how important CarPlay is to a lot of people. I think it's just become so ubiquitous.
Ubiquitous.
It's, ubiquitous. Sorry. It's become so ubiquitous within the automotive world that people just don't even think about it anymore. Like, your car doesn't have CarPlay? That's, you know, the...
Right.
That's weird.
You know who else doesn't have CarPlay? Tesla. Well,
yeah, but Rivian. Tesla's never had CarPlay, and neither has Rivian. Right. That's the rub, is they've never had it.
So, like, you can
GM's
argue
had it and now taking it away.
That's it. And, like, it's like, okay, if you've committed to, like, Tesla and Rivian, we are not doing this, okay? And you have to make a decision about whether or not you're going to do that. But when you take a brand like GM, all of their cars, and you say, like, oh, we've changed our mind. This thing that we incorporated because you hated what we had, and we put in this thing that you all love, we're going to yank the rug out from under you, and you're going to have this thing that you don't know if you're going to like, but trust us, you're going to like it. Nobody trusts you. Nobody's ready to trust it. Nobody's ready to make the switch. I mean, I get all the, you know, it's all like this sort of forward-thinking stuff. I'm like, yeah, maybe, but I think you're going to lose some people. I mean, I think there are people who aren't, if you're a die-hard GM person or like, there's too many vehicles out there. There's just too many to choose from, that to have something as important as infotainment, where once it was sort of an afterthought, it's a big deal. Like, that's a huge part of your experience in a car right now. To have that be frustrating and wonky and not be something intuitive, that's enough for people to say, I don't want to deal with that again. I dealt with that 7, 8, 9 years ago. It was awful. I don't want to deal with that again. I don't want to risk dealing with that again. I'm not going to buy your car. I'm getting one of the other 250,000 SUVs currently available on the market in the United States, you know?
Yeah. And then the fact that, you know, it's the idea that everyone would have the cars, they all have GMs. Like, every car I have would be a GM. I'm like, well, that doesn't work that way, because I have different cars, and each car I get into, I have the same interface, which I know, which I understand, which I don't have to learn, you know, a different interface in order to do things. And then people have to rent cars. The Tesla argument is Tesla was the only EV in town for a long time. So they've sold a lot of EDs, and they're still the Kleenex of EVs, to be honest. But, you know, I've written about it, and other people have said, when is Tesla getting CarPlay?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Never going to happen.
Oh, yeah. We'll see. We'll see if Tesla, you know, at some point they have to do something. I mean, they're still selling a lot of cars, but. I don't know. I don't understand this. And then they're like, well, we're only doing on EVs, but not on gas cars. You're like, what? That's even crazier. You're just like, oh, my God.
For now, they're only doing it on the EV.
You know, it'll roll out to everything. That's where it's going. It's like, we're just going to take this baby step and see how it goes. Good luck with that.
And the issue is that regular people are going to look at this, and their immediate assumption is they can't buy a Bolt, right? If they go buy a Bolt EUV or EV right now, it's not going to have CarPlay in it. Because they're not going to read the whole thing. They're not going to realize it's not going to start until 2024. Not gonna, but this is just immediately, boom, you can't get a Chevy or a Lyric or a Cadillac or whatever with CarPlay. That's how.
And that's going to be the perception. People are going to the rumor. The perception is going to be like, they don't have it anymore. Any of their cars, you can get it with any of them anywhere ever.
For what it's worth, you can't get any of those vehicles anyway. So,
with or without CarPlay.
it's such a weird, weird decision, because these are software driven cars. That's the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Oh, you have choice. You have all this software, and it's code. You don't have to put new hardware in. You plug your hardware in.
There actually is some hardware that's associated with supporting CarPlay for authentication and stuff. But, you know,
it's code.
it's mostly code. But there's some hardware. And, you know, there's also, you know, integrating all of these systems together, you know, getting them all to work together. And they're not always on the same update cadence and things like that, you know. And what they're saying is, you know, we'll be able to do updates faster, you know, add more features to our software, you know, if we don't also have to support this other stuff,
which is that doesn't make any sense, because the hardware is there, the software is there. When you're building out the code, you just don't change that hardware. You just don't change those lines of code. That's it. Like, this part, no, we don't have to change it because it's not been updated by Apple, or it's not been updated by Google. Because of Android Auto. It's Android Auto. That's the other thing. Because there's some things that are available in Android Auto that are not available in Android Automotive. If you get into the Polestar and you're like, oh, here's the store, you're like, there's just things missing. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, I can get this thing in Android
there's
Auto.
There's definitely fewer apps available in the automotive version of the store than what you can download on your device and run on in Android Auto.
Yeah, it's such an incredibly weird decision.
I mean, people will have to accept it or not, but I think it's going to cause some consternation for some people.
You know, I guess one thing I'm curious about, and you know, GM, you know, didn't provide any insight on this. You know, I think we, you know, as a group are, you know, more, we're always trying out new stuff. You know, it's our job. But I wonder how many regular people actually use the projection systems. There's the people who comment online who tend to be a fairly small percentage of the general population and not necessarily representative of the general population. Because, you know, I know that, you know, GM's got telemetry data on how many people actually use projection systems versus, you know, the number of vehicles that they sell. And I'm wondering if part of their decision-making process, and I suspect it probably is part of the process, is they looked at it and said, you know, only like 5% or 10% of customers were actually using this.
I will say, well, someone who rides a motorcycle who can see into cars,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
I would say 90% of them are using some sort of projection.
But you know,
system.
The other thing that's sort of that's
no one is using the in-car navigation.
No one does.
90% of the in-car navigation is trash.
But even if they have the data on who is using, like, if you think about that, Sam, who is using these products? Okay, let's just stereotype some OEMs. Do you think a younger generation is buying most of the GM products, or do you think it's going to an older generation? So if you have older folks who might just not be using their phone to begin with, then it's sort of a moot point. Like, what are younger folks using? When I see like my kids get in a car, like they all want to use it. In fact, I have a charger that doesn't have it because it's so old. Rose gets home and she's like, oh, she's 20 years old. You know, they expect to see that in a car. Like, once they have it, they expect to see it. I think the younger the driver skews, the more likely they are to just want to have to do that projection. I think if you're 65, not so much because you're just not doing that. But I think the younger you are, stereotypically, the younger you are, probably the more tech savvy you are, the more likely you're just going to want to be able to plug and play kind of thing. And that eliminates that for those people.
Plus the data was strong enough for Toyota to implement it, which meant they had to do a reversal of what they wanted to do. They did not want CarPlay and Android Auto in their vehicles, but they had, mm-hmm. They looked at the data and they're like, you know what? It's enough where people are not buying our vehicles. Let's add it in there. And, you know, Polestar is doing the same thing. And, you know, Lucid is, you know, they're a young company, but even they were like, we need to put this in here.
Yeah.
So they're doing the opposite of what other people are doing.
All right. Fair enough. Well, we'll see how this all plays out over the coming months.
I'm assuming they'll just like reverse it.
Probably.
They're like, April Fools. I thought it was a joke. I thought it was an April Fool. The first time I saw the news,
I was getting ready
to leave the house. I was like, no. And then like, oh no. And so I immediately I wrote up something for Ars Technica about it. I'm like, this is such a weird, like, why? Why would you do this?
Yeah. All right. I think Nicole's got to quit pretty soon.
I get a jet in 2 minutes.
Okay. So let's answer one listener question.
Okay.
And I'd like to hear your thoughts on this one. This is from Paul Kavanaugh, on Mastodon. Says, I have never heard a discussion of how disabled drivers will recharge their electric vehicles. If you go to a gas station, you can opt for full serve. Some self-service stations will refuel disabled drivers' vehicles. How do Tesla, Electrify America, etc., address the needs of disabled drivers?
That's a really good question, because even
right now they don't.
And truly, really, I didn't thought about that. But even just as a not disabled driver, pulling into one of those charging stations, sometimes just the clearance that you have in terms of getting in and out of your car when you're perfectly mobile is not great.
Mm-hmm.
Forget if you're actually someone who's handicapped and needs to have a wheelchair or something to get to a charging port. I don't know that I've seen one where you could even do that, especially where like you have the chargers that are like up on a curb. How do you get over the curb? Like, you can step over it, but somebody who's disabled can't even step over it.
You got to reach up.
And especially with the CCS cables, you know, they're thicker than the Tesla cables. They are pretty they can be pretty unwieldy.
Manhandling them, and also in the colder weather, they get unwieldy to begin with. They get very stiff, and they're hard to just turn them to get them at the right angle to plug them into your vehicle. They can be a challenge again. And I am not disabled, and they can be a challenge. The only thing I can think of, and it's not specifically for disabled drivers, but I guess it could help. When I talked to the folks at Electrify America, they did say that they're going to be doing some things where they have almost like it's more towards cities, he said, as I recall correctly, where they're going to be having charging stations that are almost like sort of a premium experience, sort of like you can pull in and they have a valet that will take care of it and will get your vehicle charged up for you and you'll be notified when your vehicle is charged. Well, that would allow someone else to charge your vehicle.
Somebody else will have the hassle of figuring out, why won't this thing start charging?
Exactly. Yeah. Someone else can fight with it. Like, what's wrong with our chargers? But it's still, I don't know how accommodating, like, okay, so if you pulled up into this, are you now pulled still so far away from the little, because there's, you know, supposed to be like a more of an experience, like when you drive up to a rest stop or a travel stop on a highway where you can gas your car and you can go and run to the bathroom and you can get yourself some Burger King or whatever happens to be there, sort of that kind of experience where you can have everything taken care of. I don't know how accessible that would be, but that's the closest thing I can think of.
Well, I know the EA station here near my house, you know, the way it's configured, you know, they've got pairs of chargers side by side. And then there's a pair of chargers and then two spots and then two more chargers and two more spots. If you were in a wheelchair, why'd you delete that?
I didn't mean to. I was in the wrong spot.
That's all right.
And now I can't bring it back. So you're just going to have to remember what he said. Yeah.
Anyway, there is no way that, you know, if you're in a chair, you know, if you were like, if you had, you know, a van with hand controls, you know, you got out of the thing in your chair, there's no way you would be able to get that cable and plug it in. You know, they have to have these stations reconfigured in a different way, or, you know, I mean, I know that there's work being done on robotic charging systems and things like that. And there's also wireless charging, you know, which is, you know, more for home use. You know, and that's, you know, as we start to get wheelchair accessible EVs, you know, that's probably one of the things that we'll have included with those is wireless charging systems. It's a real challenge.
It's interesting because they are rebuilding a gas station near my house. It was a Valero, and now they're going to rebuild it as a 7-Eleven. And the layout's weird, but when I drive by, the fact that there's no charging stations there is just boggles my mind, because we should have service stations, like, you know, or gas station, you know, charging stations should start sort of becoming gas stations where you have an attendant, you have someone there who can, like, hey, this isn't working. They can call somebody and say, hey, number 12 isn't working, because most people who use it, they're just frustrated. They're not going to use the app. Mm-hmm. They're not going to get like, let me do some work for Electrify America or EA Go and tell you that your thing isn't working. You know, they're just like, ah, they just move to the next one. And, or they, if you live in Northern California, you drive 5 miles, there's another charger, but everywhere else in the world, you're like, well, I'm doomed. But having someone there and be like, hey, you know, like you do at a gas station where you need full service, you can have someone who can come out and, like, and plug that in for you. It's just we have to start thinking. I know it's, you know, yes, you can go to a lot of charge stations are showing up at shopping centers or, you know, with restaurants, and that's great. But I think we need to start looking at attendance, people who are there, who are being paid to sort of keep an eye, and they can sell, you know, they can sell snacks and drinks. Right. And they, that's where all the money comes from at gas stations anyway, is all the random beef jerky you sell. Just a wall of beef jerky, some fountain drinks, a coffee machine.
So, like, so what you're describing is
turn
a Buc-ee's.
It into a Buc-ee's. Yes.
Yeah, whatever Buc-ee's is, Buc-ee's. That's what they should have. I don't know what Buc-ee's is. I know what 7-Eleven is. I should just be able to walk in.
Wait a minute, you haven't been to a Buc-ee's yet?
Wait. No. You haven't been to a Buc-ee's? What's wrong with you? Have you not? What?
What is a Buc-ee's?
Is it like a, I'm is it just speechless.
It's a Texas thing.
It's a little bit outside of Texas. It's now there's some in like Atlanta, not Atlanta, in Georgia. I think there's a couple in Florida. They're like they're like a 7-Eleven on steroids. There is practically a wall. Actually, there's a beef jerky.
Oh, so it's like a truck stop.
Better than a truck stop.
Bigger than a truck stop.
Like, nice. You know, imagine 100 gas pumps, And
we have one of those 500
varieties of jerky.
And it's like the inside is the size of like a Walmart, and they have really good, the food is good though. Like they have like barbecue sandwiches and
Bucky's should just have a bunch of Chargers, and you have a person out there. And I will try a Bucky's because I would like to everyone's getting beef jerky for the holidays this year.
Okay, then if you want to give everyone beef jerky, you need to go to Bucky's. You can get all the beef jerky you could possibly want.
Yeah, we need to. Yeah, but the robot thing is cool, but it's not feasible in an outside, out in the middle of nowhere situation.
Right.
And again, people just are better than robots.
They're more adaptable.
They're more adaptable. I mean, if you're welding the same thing over and over again, let the robot do
that. Well, you know, maybe if Elon gets his Optimus robot working, you know, they can just station one of those at every supercharger station, and then just have the robots plug in for you.
Hey, if he can make it happen, fine. I mean, I don't think he will, but if he can make it
happen. You never know.
Ye of little faith.
Hyundai has the murder dogs and murder robots.
Yeah, that's right. They bought Boston Dynamics.
Yeah, they have Boston Dynamics. So Hyundai and Tesla are
the murder dogs. They are scary.
Well, they also have, I forget what the name for their humanoid robot is, the Boston Dynamics robot.
The one that flips over things.
Yeah.
I don't need to flip. I just need to open the... I don't need the robot parkouring over my Ioniq 5. I just need it to plug in the charger.
But I would like it to parkour over my own Ioniq 5 if it could.
I don't know. I think those things are pretty heavy. You know, if it bounces off the roof, you know, it's a big dent in your roof or your hood.
But if they did a little dance, like it plugs all the cars in, and then while everyone's waiting,
entertains you.
Yeah, did like some close-up magic.
See that now, like me and Robbie are both like dancing, like somehow like this.
Got some jazz hands going here.
Yeah. I think we can't get any better than that today.
And on that note.
Jazz hands.
All right.
Jazz hands robots.
Thank you, everybody. And we will talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.